Welcome back to Doctors Who Create. I'm Mekla Neelakuntan, your host for this episode. I had the unique pleasure of chatting with Dr. Shilpa Dharivemula, an OBGYN physician focused on reimagining medicine through cultural dance. Take a listen to our discussion about the Asimkala Initiative.
All right. So this month, I had the opportunity to talk with Shilpa, one of the board members and I think creative director of the Asimkala Initiative, kind of about the initiative itself, as well as its role in the Reimagining Medicine Festival. So Shilpa, if you'd like to give us a little bit of an introduction of yourself, and then we'll chat more about the Asimkala Initiative.
Sounds great. Thank you guys for having me. So my name is Shilpa Dharivemula. I am an OBGYN now doing a fellowship at UNC on research and also generalist OBGYN. So it's kind of a non-ACGME accredited fellowship that gets you more of a footing in the research world. And I also really love arts and medicine. I spent a year kind of traveling after undergrad, looking at traditional arts in different communities around the world and how it impacts their healing processes and cultural societies and how they're built around their dance forms. And then I came back to med school, really feeling a void in terms of what I love to do, which is classical Indian dance, specifically Kuchipudi. I then found that there are many other people like me in medical school, people that did arts and traditional dances and just want to do it again, but don't know how to best combine both their worlds together. And so from that, Asimkala was born. And I have run Asimkala for the past, 6, 7 years. And have really tried to integrate Asimkala and some of its thought processes with multiple organizations. So served as the artist in residence at AMWA, presented an arts piece through Tropical Medicine and Hygiene Association Fellowship, really trying to find ways to publish and present on how traditional arts really is important for social change in medicine.
Yeah, that's, incredible. I think it's so unique and so powerful that you've been able to find this love of yours and this passion of yours and have been able to incorporate it into medicine in such a useful and powerful way. It's very cool. I was lucky to be able to watch some of the videos that you had available on the Asimkala website. And truly, I think we all know that dance is such a powerful form of expression, and to see it used in expressing different stories of women and different stories of health inequity was really quite something to see. What do you feel like are some of the most important kind of tenets of dance-based narrative medicine? What do you feel like is most important to tell in the story?
Right. Great question. So traditional dance, I would say there's definitely two branches here. Dance-based narrative medicine, I think, bases itself on Western and contemporary dance forms, mm-hmm. and own long lineage through dance movement therapy, through some of the contemporary artists and leaders that have really developed like performance arts-based therapy and performance arts-based narratives. But I think in the traditional dance and cultural dance world, that isn't quite as developed. And it's interesting because traditional dances and cultural dances often do tell stories and tell stories of communities and histories and mythologies that have been a part of those societies for many, many years, addressing the same questions that I think we answer and question ourselves upon today. Some of the ethics and some of the challenges we face in medicine are challenges that are very ancient and have been presented in multiple cultures and multiple performances. And I think that is the power of using traditional dances, because it actually brings a cultural vocabulary to the stories that we see and allows an authentic cultural expression of what people feel or experience in medicine. And I think it's a really beautiful way to bring diversity into the medical narrative world without having to kind of point it out. You know, you're not saying this is diversity. You're able to be like observant of a new dance style and a new dance vocabulary and understand that by having that new dance form there telling the story, you yourself are experiencing diversity inherently. And so a lot of these cultural dance forms, and I can only really speak from Kuchipudi and some of the other traditional Indian dance styles, that we are trained in dramaturgic dancing. We're trained in hand gestures and eye movements and storytelling. And so it is almost an easy transition to tell a story of medical narratives and medical inequity in classical Indian dance. And so I think in terms of what is required, bringing the traditional dance form in its full glory and its full performative abilities to just tell a different story. I think it's all you really need.
Yeah, that's so true. Like, it really lends itself very well to storytelling, because that's, you know, that's kind of the, you know, one of the main points of it in the first place.
Right.
As far as I know, and I was trained in Carnatic vocal music. I'm not a dancer, but as far as I know, kind of being classically trained in traditional Indian dance like Kuchipudi or Bharatanatyam or whatever it is quite a rigorous process. And I feel like a lot of it is based in lots of pre-existing knowledge and understanding, like a lot of knowing how to do things correctly and how people have done it previously. And how did you map that to creating these new like choreography pieces in relation to medical narratives? You know, it's just such a different story that you're telling with such a traditional dance.
I think I have to preface it by saying I don't know if I've actually done it correctly. And that is, I mean, as a classical Carnatic singer, you understand that creating your choreography from an ancient tradition that's been passed down through your teachers, maybe ignorance or blindness or guts, I don't know what it is. I can tell you quite honestly, I was a little afraid to show some of my earlier pieces to my dance teacher because of how inept and inadequate I felt like I was to create such a piece, you know? And mm-hmm. as I said, you start from a very old tradition. And of course, we know our history and colonization has really led to the loss of that culture, but also a revival of that culture. Mm-hmm. And how now people are very intent on preserving that culture. And I've seen that around the world as well. I think a lot of cultures that have been through colonization or been through cultural loss in that way really don't enjoy the always pushing the boundaries on a traditional art form. What I have noticed is that a lot of that choreography is actually starting in college campuses. We all start with a guru. We have amazing gurus. Guru Anuradha Nehru, Kishore Musalikanti, Sasikala Fenomarthy, Akila Takalapalli. So like really amazing dance teachers. And they kind of started the idea of like what choreography could look like. They really asked, you know, a couple of taking the original like Master Gaur's choreography and then trying to create different variations, different stories, but sticking to the realm of Hindu mythology, right? There was much of a deviation from that in the earlier stages. Now, of course, that has changed immensely. If you look at the performances happening now, a lot of people are creating new pieces on a woman's point of view, creating new pieces on like earth and earth's changes. People are creating pieces on violence against women, you know, or just creating pieces on adaptations of the Nutcracker or, you know, LA. But I think where I saw it first happening was on college campuses. And I think a lot of dancers grow up with a teacher, then they go to college and it's suddenly like you're cut off from class, but you really want to dance. And then you have these like Indian societies or Indian organizations that are like, oh, we have a Diwali function or it's time for the spring show, banding together and being like, we can create these dance pieces. We can start to put together shows. And I remember like as a Kuchipudi dancer, Bharatanatyam is a mainstay of many college campuses. And I'm pretty sure like Kathak and RDC feel similarly, like they're very few. And then, so when you join a dance group, you end up kind of following the Bharatanatyam style. But I think because you're all different dancers from different backgrounds, the idea of creating fusion pieces becomes a thing. Like, I don't know if you noticed, there's so many new like college campus festivals and competitions on the cleverness of the storytelling, on the intricacies of the dance performance, on the accuracy of steps. So I think it's a lot of the college campuses that have really elevated choreography and really broken barriers onto what can be told in classical Indian dance. We're being really impressed by some of the college shows that I saw and was a part of and led a few times. And so I think that's kind of where the idea started to say, like, we don't have to tell stories of Hindu mythology every time. And we don't have to tell, you know, ancient inequity when we're looking inequity right in the face every day. You can tell your own story because this is your dance as well. And you should be able to express through your body what you want to say about what you see around you. So I think that's kind of where most of the change happened, was on college campuses.
That is very, very cool. And so incredible to think about how such young and contemporary folks are really the ones leading the charge. And it makes a lot of sense, you know, to be able to continue such an old tradition. You also have to be able to kind of see it in your own way and understand it for you, exactly like you were saying. So I think it's a very brave and I think really the right decision, if there's a right or a wrong in all of this, to map it to the experiences that we're all seeing and kind of experiencing every day. So cool. Oh my gosh.
It's amazing, like what people are creating now. And I think that loaded into festivals, like South Asian festivals are opening up. There's a lot of new space for South Asian dancing. And then a lot of choreographers, like my gurus, are also creating new and interesting works that go beyond the Hindu pantheon. It's like, I think everyone's kind of understanding that those stories are going to be always told forever and always revered, but that new stories should be told as well.
I know you touched on this a little bit already in terms of kind of the response to the Uthimkala initiative from your gurus. I want to know what folks outside of kind of the traditional Indian dance realm or those who had never been exposed to it previously, how they've responded to this and how they have kind of understood what you are trying to storytell.
Yeah. So I will say that we published a paper and kind of shared why we do what we do. And she was she's like, you know, so impressed with what we're trying to create. So I think, you know, with more confidence and with more like swagger, I think I could be like, this is what I'm doing. She's so sweet. She's very kind to me. But I think in terms of the audience, I have to be honest. So I created a piece called Sati's Surgery. And that piece is comparing, it's a part of a bigger series called the Mahavidyas in Medicine, which we'll get to in a minute. But Sati's Surgery is the opener because the Mahavidyas come from the self-immolation of Sati, essentially, is this Hindu story. And so we basically paralleled what happens to Sati, a goddess who gives up her life because she is over and done with the inequities in the world and the inequities of her married life. And then from her anger and her decision are born multiple goddesses. Goddesses are not our regular goddesses. They're goddesses who are off the beaten path, so they say. So goddesses that don't get married, goddesses that can cut off their own heads and still survive. And so these are still revered goddesses, but they're not in the regular pantheon. You know, they're a little bit different. They're still revered, but almost feared in a way, because who's everyone's afraid of an independent woman, clearly. And so this series is kind of to address medical inequities by paralleling each medical inequity to a story from the Mahavidyas in Medicine series. Each Mahavidya comes with a series of themes and questions, and we just parallel that to the questions we have to today. So Sati's Surgery was the opener, and that basically is a story comparing a surgeon's vulnerability in the OR with an outcome that you can't control to Sati's decisions and her vulnerability as well. And I presented that piece at a festival, the Human Rights and Arts Festival in New York. And I wasn't even really a part of the main stage. I was just like an opener in like the cafe area. So I just like a piece, and I was terrified because it's such a complex thing to explain, right, to a non-Indian audience. And also it's even for Indian audiences, it's like two levels of complexity. And a non-medical audience too, right? Like, how am I going to say your surgeon can be scared sometimes? People are not really into hearing if a surgeon is not confident every single minute of every day. And so it felt like I was kind of opening up wounds in both fields, you know, in a way that I didn't know how it would be received. So we presented it. And then afterward, people were really excited about it. I was amazed. People came up and they were like, oh, that's such a great idea. And like, you're showing the humanity in surgery and the humanity in this person and why they do what they do. And this is like an ethical exploration of inequities in medicine. And I mean, I didn't go that far. I was just like, I'm just trying to create a piece that parallels each other. It seemed like maybe this is something that people are interested in. And maybe this is something that doesn't need to stick only in like closed doors in medical spaces or closed doors in dance spaces, that you don't need to have a knowledge of dance vocabulary or medical realities to appreciate this, because everyone's been a patient, everyone has experienced something, everyone goes through sickness. So why not just give some validation to their stories through this kind of dance piece? So I think, yeah, the reception has been really great in terms of performances. So every performance, we've been doing a couple of shows in New York, and the reception has been really positive.
Okay.
I think we've also been able to publish a couple of papers about it, and that too has been positive as well. But I think, you know, we're definitely not like putting together full shows yet. So I think mm-hmm. I'm lacking a little bit there, but in terms of like 1 or 2 minute, you know, excerpts we can do, or the shorter shows that we join, it's been pretty positive. And it's really interesting. We did a piece actually on an ICU decision-making situation with the family, paralleling it to one of the Mahavidyas named Shinnamasta. And the idea being that, you know, such a human experience, and we overlaid someone reading a post form, which is the form people sign when they choose what they accept for DNR, DNI. Mm-hmm. And we had to read over it as we did a classical dance piece to it. So it was like a very sterile reading over a very animated dance piece. And the idea was to juxtapose like the sense of signing your life away on a paper, or signing a paper that's read so direct and read so sterilely, on something that was so inherently human. You know, it's so complex. The checkboxes you're checkboxing, you know, it's like a lot of emotion behind all of that. And I remember people came up afterward, we had a round table, and they came up and they were talking about their experiences actually signing that form, and like how upsetting it was and how traumatized, wow. How they were like their family's caregiver, and they were telling their mom like, click this, don't click that, like, and how upsetting that process was, and how inhumane it felt to them that they were just given a form and nobody really recognized in the room how complex end-of-life decision-making can be. And so, yeah, I think that really was also pretty inspiring, that people called on their own experiences and watching a dance piece like that.
Yeah, I'm trying not to applaud you over and over this interview. But I just think it's so incredible. It takes so much work. It takes so much thought. And this initiative is making so many different things so accessible, whether it's Hindu mythology, like making that more accessible and more understanding, and being able to map that again to our current experiences. And then also making so many parts of medicine that you often think of as, like you said, sterile, or, you know, kind of behind the curtain, accessible too, and humanizing surgeons and humanizing so many different experiences that, you know, a lot of folks, you know, maybe take for granted or think are much more simple than they actually are. So there's so many different layers. I think it's really wonderful to hear how well received things have been so far, because I really hope that this initiative just gets bigger and bigger.
We also were, you know, doing a piece on decision-making in labor, mm-hmm. and like how people always say like a C-section is not a natural birth. You know, like I failed. Many women think that they failed, or many reproducing bodies think that they failed after they, you know, didn't have that vaginal birth that they were going to do. Took an epidural, like that was the wrong decision, you know. And so many patients that I see in the clinic that come to me, they say, oh, I feel like I was coerced into that decision to have a C-section, or I feel like I didn't have a choice, and I felt like I didn't want it. Like I wanted to push, I could have done it. Like I know my body, and just so much regret around what should be the happiest moment of your life. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, there's like sometimes patients have to go to sleep, go under general, and they don't meet their baby. Like that special moment of like your baby being the first, like you being that first person the baby touches, and you losing that, like that is so painful. The pieces we did was like on baby development and birth, and trying to like raise the point that no matter how the baby is born, it's still a biologically made baby, and it is still naturally made from carbon form. There's nothing artificial in your baby.
Yeah.
And so however the baby is born, it is nothing artificial about that. And really trying to talk about decision-making and autonomy in birth, right? Like, it's always a balance between mom and baby and who we choose and how we prioritize what we prioritize. But I think in a way creating these pieces is therapy for me, because
yeah,
and I'm like totally broken or upset from what happens on a ship. It's something that I can't control. You know, sometimes it goes beautifully. One is the most beautiful birth of all time, and you have all the feels, and everyone's crying. But sometimes it's like you gave someone a cancer diagnosis. It's someone, you know, you told them, you made them fill out that pulsed form. You know, saw somebody in pain. Someone had a miscarriage or a stillbirth. Like, a lot of things happen that, like, leave me with such an emotion that sometimes processing it and reminding myself this is an ancient story. It's been told 1,000 times. We all know the stories. They are not new to humanity. And so we need to remind ourselves we're a bigger part. We're part of this bigger fabric of human existence. And, like, it just helps me pass that story through my body and just not keep it and not sit on it forever.
Yeah. And I mean, sometimes there's just things that we experience in medicine that you can't put into words. I feel like that's why art and medicine go so hand in hand, because there's just a lot of complex things and experiences that patients and providers and everyone in between just experiences. And to be able to tell that story for yourself through dance or other forms of art is so, it's so needed for really everybody involved. So, yeah, I think this is such a crucial initiative that you're spearheading. I really hope that it continues. Speaking of kind of bigger and better things that are coming for the Asimkala initiative, I know that, you're working now with the Reimagining Medicine Festival 2.0. So tell us about that.
Yeah. So actually, this is the third one, I believe.
Oh, 3.0. Okay.
That might have been my mistake on your mess, so don't worry about that. But so, yeah, Reimagining Medicine is a fabulous festival. We started it actually in 2020 during the pandemic. Started at Dartmouth Medical School, Geisel. And we started it because of a lot of discord that was happening at the time. I mean, you know, and I'm sure you can harken back to 2020, bring yourself back if you want to January 2020. I don't know if you want to go back there, but if you do, that feeling of just in helplessness and unable to really address the larger social questions. You know, you go to work every day, you're dealing with COVID patients, you're terrified for yourself, your family members, but you know your duty is to go to work. And yet you're hearing on the news of racial inequities, social inequities, people not getting access to food because of the pandemic, losing their jobs. So it's like, you understand, like, you are lucky to have a job, yes, as a resident, but at the same time, you're so overwhelmed with your daily tasks and what you see around you, you know, like FaceTiming families into rooms. I mean, all of it was very, it was very mechanical and very stressful and non-human in a way, while watching humanity kind of crumble around you. So I think people just felt like there needs to be something that kind of brings us together. And so art, like you said, right, medicine and art go hand in hand, and people have a lot to say about medicine and a lot to say about health, community, and residents and attendings and students. So we basically decided to put an online dance and performance show theme, and art was racial equity, and had people submit pieces and had some speakers and some performances and put an online conference together. And then we had a second reimagining festival at University of Kentucky. So this is like a traveling festival. So basically it's like a structure, and then each medical school just adopts it and, you know, puts it on, invites local speakers to talk about arts and medicine and local performers. And University of Kentucky did a great job. And then this year it's at Cornell. And so we are, you know, Asimkala is a part of that development team this year. So we're really excited about that, and helping kind of add more artists to the fray and hopefully, you know, make it even bigger and better than ever before. So yeah, we are very, very, very thrilled.
This is Future Mikala popping in real quick to say that by the time of publication of this podcast episode, the Reimagining Medicine Festival 2023, or 3.0, performances are now available for video viewing on YouTube. So we'll make sure to link that in our description.
Our goal is to, like, is to make this a festival that just jumps medical school to medical school, so that each, you know, arts and medicine can kind of continue. And it's in a way echoing to the work that Doctors Who Create kind of started, right? Mm-hmm. Like bringing speakers that are local and artists and people that are thinking about humanities and medicine together. And so just trying to continue that work by having people convene around arts and medicine at every medical school.
Yeah, I think you're on track to make all of those things happen. I really do. Yeah, it's just so incredible. I really think that the word that keeps coming back to me when, as we've been talking, is really the word brave. I think it takes so much bravery to tell such stories in, you know, traditional ways, and but to do it in a contemporary way, in a way that's accessible to people. I think there's just so many layers, like I said before, and I think it's really brave of this entire initiative to take on such an important task.
Like, it's also interesting, right? Because, you know, in asking these questions of mythology, you're almost questioning cultural norms. Mm-hmm. And I think if I had to say what's the bravest part of this is that, mm-hmm. you know, I'm sure you've asked questions before, like in certain mythologies and stories, like, why did this have to happen to this person? And as a classical Indian dancer, like, you would perform those pieces. So like when we did the Ramayana, for example, you perform the Sita, the heroine of that story is Sita, banished with her husband Rama to the forest. And then at the end, she's kidnapped by this demon named Ravan, and is kept there for a while. Ram goes to save her with his large army, saves her, brings her back. And then before he brings her back, there's a scene where he asks her to cross the fire to prove her purity. I mean, there are different translations. I don't know what the original translation actually is. So these are all, of course, English translations. So forgive me if anybody's listening and they're like, that is not what she was going to cross the fire. I've definitely, you know, and we've like acted out that scene in class, dance class, right? Like all the that and sadness that, you know, she's so happy to see her husband, but then he's like, well, are you still pure?
Right.
And it's like, she's a goddess. Why wouldn't she be? You know, mm-hmm. when, and then like, I remember watching the Kavanaugh trial, right? And being like, this is literally the same question again.
Yeah.
You're asking the same question again. You're asking, was she drinking? What was she wearing? How long was she in that person's room? You know, did she go in alone? Why did she go in alone? What are all these questions? Right. And how many asking women this? You've asked it in the Ramayana, you're asking it again. And so it's like one of those things where you're like, the injustice just continues. And as much as you portray the humanity of it, it's like, no, like that someone has to question why he asked her that question. Mm-hmm. And in dance, in a way, it's almost that chance to ask that question.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And like, 'cause now it joins the community of dance. So it's a dance piece.
Yeah.
But you know, it's like, raises the question of what are we doing as humanity? You know, you're talking about wellness and improvements and reducing bias and all these like different topics in medicine. But how do you reduce bias if your basis still asks those questions?
Yeah.
You know, you were performing and raised and trained in this. And yes, ask any auntie or uncle, they will tell you, there was a reason why, like in her past, like they will give you a very clear explanation as to why this happened to her, because she somehow this was meant to happen to her, but I don't buy it, you mm-hmm. know? But then it's so funny now, right? You look at social media, or you look at public opinion, or you look at the way in which people, communities talk, right? Like we always think about like, what do people say about us?
Yeah.
Like, I think it's ridiculous that Ram acted the way he acted.
Yeah.
It's almost this like mirror looking at you and you being like, oh, actually, I do think like that. I do have
a
thought process. And so, you know, there's like so much richness, so many questions to ask of our culture, that it seems fitting that you parallel culture to culture, medical culture to traditional culture.
Yeah.
Each other.
That is such a wonderful way to put it. Paralleling culture to culture. I feel like I have grown so much and learned so much in these, you know, 30 minutes that I've been talking with you. I answered all of the questions that I wanted to ask you today, but I wanted to give you a chance to kind of wrap up and, you know, and let us know really anything and everything you want us to know about Asimkula moving forward.
Yeah. So I think, you know, I know we've kind of talked about the Mahavidyas and medicine series, but mm-hmm. I think the reason we picked the Mahavidyas is because these are goddesses that are kind of off the fringe. They're not, you know, they're not the consorts of the male gods. They're having their own lives. They're doing a lot of things on their own, like independent woman. And so our idea was to bring them to the forefront. You know, there's a lot of classical Indian dances that do stories on male gods and their different forms, but not many that do it on these goddesses, demigoddesses in a way. So each goddess and their story parallels an issue. And so we are always expanding and always trying to add more to it, you know, trying to really bring up concerns that we see in medicine. So our hope is that people continue to ask these questions of themselves and come up with these new ideas on their own, and really do it not just in Hindu culture, but in cultures around the world. You know, any yeah. culture ask a question or highlight a story, highlights it through their traditional arts and through their culture, and really questions the norms that we all face in both. We've actually had the opportunity to have dancers from a Lebanese culture. We've had people from the Burmese culture, you know, trying to perform dances as well and tell stories from their own communities. And our goal is to really amplify that. So using what I know, I can only talk about what I do, which is Kuchipudi dance and classical Indian dance. So using that, I use that as a platform and a medium. And then from there, elevate the stories that I want to elevate and ask the questions they want to ask. It's just a nice reminder that we have a lot of work to do on both sides, that yeah. to truly change medical culture, you got to change culture in general. You know, it's not just upon medicine, incumbent on medicine to change itself. And so people need to change. And if that needs to happen, you need to be able to reflect. And if you don't know how to reflect, if you just assume a truth is a truth, you're never going to be able to change. You're never going to be critical of what you see. And like, that is what you need. No more trainings will ever teach you that, right? No amount of PowerPoints will get that into your head. So for those of you who are artists and dancers who really want to ask those questions and create ethical performances that look beyond what's in front of you, I think we would love to have you. So yeah, I guess that's really what I want to say. I think our goal is to one day put together a full production, but as you all well know, pulling together a bunch of medical professionals for a dance show is like herding cats. So I don't know if that's ever going to happen in my time, but hopefully one day.
If you like what you're hearing, don't forget to subscribe, tell a friend, leave a review. We would love to hear from you.
And if you have any questions, comments, or concerns, you can email us at doctorswhocreate@gmail.com.
Or tweet us at doctorscreate.
Or check out our website, doctorswhocreate.com, to listen to our podcast episodes and also to check out other articles and profiles of physicians who are creative.
Intro music brought to you by the band Night Float.